to have you here, Judy and Doug.
Thank you.
Appreciate you coming into the setup studio just in my home. Thank you for making the effort to come here. And I originally, was just approached by Alex. And Alex works for
Mental Health.
Alex Krylov.
Yeah. And this was at a Treading Lightly cleanup, and he said, you must talk to Judy, because we were just mentioning The Lighthouse. And probably only a few weeks ago now, went up to watch the whales at Lighthouse, and that's the first time I'd seen it open personally. Yeah. And them, you know, it looks unreal, and they've done a great job up there. And you guys have been a steady part of that change and making that happen. So, Judy, if you would like to start, I'd just like to hear just a bit about you guys and a bit about yourselves, and then, yeah.
Okay, well, how I'm the mother of my son committed suicide up on the 1st of November 2016. On the back of that, I was approached by Jenny and Alex from Mental Health. They explained a government initiative that had been put forward, Lifespan, which I was identifying means restrictions and all sorts of things I could do to decrease the rate of suicide. The Ullerdale Lighthouse had been recognised as a hotspot for suicide, and the Shellhaven Suicide Prevention Awareness Network had been set up, SPAN.
And is this like a national initiative, is it?
It was New South Wales.
A state?
It was a federal thing, and then money was sent out.
Okay.
And then SPAN was a state thing. Alex said, will we be interested in getting something off the ground? My then husband and I, but they wouldn't do it unless we gave permission, and we were more than happy. So then Tim Hudman contacted us, and we made I said, I'd like there to be something as a memorial to Aaron. And on the back of that, we had our first meeting in December 2016, and then again in February 2017. And from that, the Lighthouse Group was set up. And it's been 7.5 years now.
Yeah, wow.
Of hard slog.
Wow.
Division. Closed-mindedness at some points.
Yeah.
Community that didn't realise, a lot of them didn't realise there was such a problem out there.
Mm.
We did went to the Ullerdale Forum and did a presentation there. And I was pulled aside by a gentleman and said, this doesn't really happen that much down here. So yes, it does. You just don't hear about it because that's how it's treated. It's something you don't talk about, and I disagree with that.
Absolutely.
So it was from there, and then it was the internal battle of getting people on board, getting funding, which took a long time to get the first $250,000, which was Liberal government Shelley Hancock, and that is what fixed the – what painted the lighthouse.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing out there, it's three different – it's Crown Lands, Maritime, and Council. So trying to find the borders of who dealt with what –
Oh, gotcha. Yep.
Was also an issue.
Oh.
And the actual lighthouse bit is Maritime.
Mm.
The area around it is Crown. Now, where the actual work at the moment finishes is the end of Crown Land. The next bit we want to do is on Council Land. We wanted to have more parking out there.
Right.
So dealing with, and I'm not a political animal by any stretch of the imagination. I just kind of think you've got a job, do it. So it has been an uphill battle, but Doug's been on board the whole time. Jenny, Alex, Liz from Mission, and Council got on board. So it's been a hard slog.
Yeah.
It started out with lots of people. And then it's just been this core group towards the end.
Sure. I stuck it through.
And it really got – when council gave us money to get a what's that? What do we call it, Doug? Like the proposal, put together the plan, development plan, that, and then Local Consulting came on board, that really got it moving. And that's – we got the $1 million funding, and that's the work started. It's not exactly how we would have liked it, but it's damn sight better than it was. We'd hoped to have toilet up there and shelter, and but, you know, tiny steps.
yeah. Well, it sounds like you've made huge progress from where you started. It's been an effort. And where did you come into it, Doug?
Judy's done herself a bit of a disservice there. Mm. She's a local that's been here for a long time. Mm. She's aware of the dynamics of our community works. She's got family that have been here for a long time. She's been seriously affected by suicide. And she's been a driving force and a stabilising influence, I think, too. When you get government factions come together, they all start looking at ways to kibosh a scheme like this to a venture like this to happen, where she's been pushing it the whole way and putting them impetus back on them to get stuff done. So I'm a police officer. I've been a police officer for 33 years. Generally, I've worked in rural locations. This is my sixth or seventh station. I've forgotten how many there is now. Part of my training is I'm a mental health intervention officer, which means I'm at the forefront of when mental health jobs come in. I'm third person to go and attend to them. Through that, I got to meet Alex Krulov and Jenny Connolly, or
Jenny Martin,
what she goes through professionally. We did a lot of jobs together. When Alex first approached Judy,
at that point it was me and my husband, because my husband was alive then.
So unfortunately passed since, again, to suicide. They wanted a group of people that would get something done. I'm second generation local, I should say. I'm actually born and bred in Sydney. Then as a young kid was brought down here by my parents, which is one of the best moves they ever did.
Yeah.
Got me out of Bondi, my brother and my sister, and we were raised down here, went to school at St Mary's and Ullathorne High School. So got a grounding of how things happen, and was also aware of the stigma of the Ullathorne Lighthouse in relation to it being a suicide or suicidal ideation hotspot. And had been to a number of jobs up there in relation to someone who had actually committed suicide and intervened with other people that were in the process of trying to, or thinking about it.
Sure.
Alex and I got along really well for a long time. So happened to meet him at a Treading Lightly clean-up day. Alex and I are surfers. He approached me in the surf one day and said, mate, I'd really like your help with this, and it doesn't hurt that you're a cop, so that we can use your office in relation to trying to get different things done. And I was able to draft letters and things on behalf of the group and get a few things done. And I think, like Judy was saying, the core group that have stayed through from the start to the end have all been quite like-minded.
Yes.
It's the peripherals that have come and gone with the project that have sort of stymied with, and I think at Judy's alluded to previously, we tend to cut through the bull and we'll talk how we feel and talk sense rather than in convoluted.
Yeah, there's no mixing of words.
Yeah, Tim said, would you chair these meetings? And I said, no. And he said, why? I said, because I'm not a political animal. I said, I'm not the one you want. Because they're paid to do a job, they just should bloody do it.
Mm.
I don't need to, suck up. But I've since found out that's really not what it's all about. Mm. You really do need to sometimes hold your tongue and you've got to look at the long game.
Yeah, sure, sure.
Yeah.
And so, this initiative was created, you said initially on a national, this come through on a state level that Alex brought.
No, Alex took an interest in it.
Okay.
And Ulladulla had been, the lighthouse had been a suicidal hotspot.
Yeah.
And then they were the driving force to do something out there, because one of the means restrictions is improving safety and reducing access to means of suicide.
Okay.
And as one of the mental health workers said way back in the beginning, if you were feeling pretty down and went out there, there's nothing out there that's going to make you feel better.
Okay.
Because it was desolate. It was awful. Yeah, barren, windswept, there was nothing out there to keep you there. You go out, oh, yeah, this is all right. Yeah, oh, there's a walk. Go.
Mm.
Where now, every time I've been out there, people are hanging around.
Mm.
And they, sit around the yarning circles and talk and there's the eagle there is for Aaron. Although someone said to me it looks more like a pigeon. I said, yeah, it's not quite what I envisaged the eagle would look like. But the eagle is there.
So what's this, a little statue?
There's a totem in the middle of one of the yarning circles.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah.
And because the day that Aaron suicided, there was eagles, seagulls the whole time. And we were there for hours. The police had wanted me to leave. And I said, nope. We're not going anywhere till he come. They bring him up. Mm. In the end, my daughter said, just leave Mum alone. Mum and Dad aren't going to go anywhere. Mm. So once he'd gone and the car had driven up the street, they disappeared. And every time you go out there sometimes, I don't know, like some people say, well, you know, supposed to be eagles out there, but they turn up at the most unusual times. I've even had one fly over the house and like going on. Thought that was a bit strange. Mm. So to me, there's a great deal of meaning. And to my family, they hold a meaning, the eagle. Mm. So, we've got that out there for him.
Beautiful.
And the amount of times we've been out there and people have been sitting around that circle talking, and then Sky and I are both not adverse to telling people why it's there and what it means, and then people take things on board. Mm. And someone committing suicide, the effect it has on family, it's not just that immediate family, it's the ripple effect that goes right out. All the emergency services are affected one way or another. Long term, they take all that home. That can then affect their family life. Mm. You've also got the people that find them, how it issues. I've had correspondence with a couple that were up there visiting on and off for years now. I often check in, how are you going? How are you going? Like, these are people that didn't know from Adam.
Yeah.
And they chased us down because I was there in my work uniform. So I was at work the day that, and they got onto the medical centre and, found out where I was and sent it through the medical centre, and it was up to me whether I wanted to keep corresponding with them.
Okay.
Mm. So it was, it does affect many, many people.
Mm, absolutely.
Mm.
Yeah, and it should be in the light, you know, like yes. As you were saying, that, you know, they don't want to use the word suicide and things like that. Like, why?
You know, it is what it is.
I think it is what it is, and I think it's good to talk about it and bring it into the light.
There's a lot of stigmas. Even in my family, someone said, oh, he's just slipped. He didn't come. And yeah, well, that really, that wasn't a pleasant day to be around me. There are those that just, they can't face it. They want to look for another reason. There's too much guilt carried with it where there shouldn't be. Quite often you do get a group of people, I'm sure Doug's even seen it, where it's a power play with their wife, their partner, their children, whatever. Like, you do get that. But overall, these people have just got to breaking point and they cannot see another way out.
Mm.
And for Aaron, he had done everything that was asked of him in the medical profession, everything. And he still, at the end, started to slip back again. And once he was told his meds needed to be put back up, that was the Thursday, the Tuesday, he committed suicide.
Mm.
So, because he hated taking them.
Yeah.
And, you know, because they put on weight, they do all sorts of things. He'd struggled to get all this weight off and he was still not small. Mm. And he just didn't want to go there again. And I think he also saw the effect it had on the family. He felt like we knew he was never going anywhere. We would have had him forever and a day at home.
Mm.
But I think he saw all his mates moving on, and then with kids especially now, and he wanted all that but just didn't have the skills to kind of, because in the end he actually was diagnosed with Asperger's, which explains so many things.
Sure.
Through his life.
Sure.
Where originally we were told it was ADHD, which is a totally different treatment profile to someone with a high on the autistic spectrum. There was a lot of guilt there too, but at the end of the day we did the best we could.
Mm.
With the information we had, and we just supported him the whole way with whatever he wanted, within reason. other than he needed to take medication because he just kept slipping back.
Yeah.
So he did what we wanted, although he was against it. He did it, but in the end it still didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
So for someone of 30, they see that all their mates moving on, and because he'd already had a couple of bouts in Shell Harbour, anyone that would speak to him in the way his mates didn't really, like, yeah, you become a bit isolated.
Mm.
So, yeah, it's sad.
Absolutely.
Mm.
But, and it had been a problem, you know, up there, so he wasn't the only one, as you were saying. So.
No, there's many. Mm. And it's not just jumping. They've driven into it. They've driven off it.
Oh, okay.
It's been going on for years.
It has. I did a statistical download of how many incidents had happened, and off the top of my head, I can't remember the exact.
Between 20
and 30. Yeah, it was between 20 and 30 that had actually committed suicide, and then there was, I think the national figure is for every person that commits suicide, there's another 30 attempts that are made. Not necessarily by that person, but there's another 30 attempts that are made by someone in the community at the same time. And when someone has committed suicide, there are indicators prior that they might have done it and backed out. So you're looking at probably 3 or 4 attempts prior to it actually happening. So it's statistically significant, like that location. If you've got between 20 and 30 people that have killed themselves up there, which is why we needed to get something done.
Mm.
There's 2 other spots in Australia that are identified as hot spots to the extent that the Yalada Lighthouse was, and of course the Gap.
The Gap in Sydney,
Sydney. And there's a place in Western Australia that's with the Long Jetty.
I can't think of the name of it. And they've spent millions there doing prevention work.
So we sort of pinched some ideas from them because they've already done feasibility studies. They've done all the things that they've had to do, and they're still at the infancy level, though, of whether it's working. There's not enough data coming back yet to see whether things they've put in place have actually worked to an extent where it's putting a dent in it. However, what they've done at the Gap, the beautification, cameras, there's alarm set up, there's phone, there's signage, there's people aware. The awareness is one of the biggest things that we have to rely on, and the beautification of the location, because we are a regional area that doesn't have the population of people coming and going from there 24/7.
Sure.
We need people to be aware of when, or identify when something looks a little bit askew, which was another reason for why we had the committee and why we were getting them funding to get everything fixed up and done up there. And the initial results coming back from, what's that place in West Australia? There and the Gap is that it's halved the at least the attempts and the deaths that have occurred there in the last 5 years.
Yeah, wow.
Now, that's significant for us. Mm. That's 20 people that, or 15 to 12 people that are going to survive or aren't going to be committing suicide in a location where we're a lot more affected by what happens. I think, as Judy was alluding to before, with the amount of people that are affected, a study done by Black Dog shows it's between 125 and 400 people are affected by anyone that's committing suicide. Mm. And that's significant. Huge. In a community of this size, we're probably more because we do know each other so much. And
because I found, because I'm quite open about it, and I was talking, once you say something to someone and they think, they might talk about it, all of a sudden, well, I've lost a brother-in-law, I've lost a brother, I've lost this. The amount of people out there that are affected, it just in this community, and the amount of people involved, even just the group, it's incredible.
Huge.
It's incredible. So it's...
And there's one thing that I've found, and Judy's found as well, talking about it does not promote suicide.
No. In fact, I would say the absolute opposite. Yeah.
By being able to talk to people about it, or talking about how you feel, or recognising it in someone else, it decreases it dramatically.
You'll get people that will argue with that because they'll say you'll get the copycat thing. Well, I'm sorry. Like, I just That's my experience is not that. It's more that people are kind of like, oh, someone else understands.
Yeah. And it gives them permission to share because you're leading by example.
And at the end of the day, if you've got someone who's suicidal, and this probably sounds a bit harsh, but at the end of the day, if their mind is made up, it doesn't matter how much intervention, how much you talk to them, whatever you put in, they're going to do it. Mm-hmm. It will happen at some point. There are definitely those that all of a sudden have an epiphany and they turn around and, well, no, things aren't so bad. But there will always be that core group that are going to finish. They're going to do it.
Mm. Yeah, that's just the unfortunate thing. Yeah. However, if – and this is part of the why the upgrade to the Lighthouse is done in the manner that it's done. There's significant information that if you can reach that person within the 10 minutes prior to them – committing or attempting to commit before they jump or they drive into it or do anything like that, it's over 85% of those people go on to lead their lives. They don't try it again, which is a great thing to know that if you can recognise someone's in a state where they're agitated, hypervigilant, they're pacing up and down, they're saying it out loud, people that are going to commit suicide actually talk about it. It's a myth that people that are going to commit suicide don't talk about it at all. Mm. Absolutely they talk about it.
Yeah, right.
And become hyper-fixated on it.
Mm.
So by having the gardens that we've had built there, the lookout, turning it into somewhere that you want to go, is we've identified that very early on is a very important thing for us. Plus it's a space. We're able to bank on some of the dollar coming in so that it is a tourist spot.
Mm.
But that was also for us to have people going there at all hours of the night too. You have bright lights, a nice shiny feature, like moths. They're attracted. People are less likely to commit suicide if they see other people around.
Yeah, sure.
There's a lot of the interviews that the police have done or psychologists have done with the police that have attended self-harm incidents is that once they're speaking to the people and they're gaining their trust, they're too embarrassed to go on with what they're doing, or they don't want to be seen to commit suicide, which is why the hardcore ones that are going to do it anyway, they do it in darkness. They do it by themselves, hidden from somewhere. They're not doing it in an open location. You don't see people down the main street in the middle of the day attempting to commit suicide. And this is what we're hoping to achieve by getting the works done up there with gardens and the rock formation and having the car park set up. And we're not finished yet though, Judy. There's plenty of work that we're trying to still get done up there. We still have some money to get some.
Well, now we need to get funding from the state government for the other car park.
Yeah.
So that there is room, you know, for people to go up there, the tourist bus or whatever.
Okay.
Because with Willara, because Ron and I went up there, and we spoke to the lady up there and she was wonderful, gave us a whole lot of information. She actually came down and spoke to our group. And they've been in the process now of, geez, it was 7 years then. So they could be 14 years since they started their work there. And originally it was all the funding came because for the suicide. But as time went on, they had to change their focus. And
oh, sorry, you mean Willara Council.
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't know what you're talking about when you just said Willara.
Oh, sorry, Willara Council. Sorry.
So the council that look after the gap.
Yes.
Thank you.
And they then had to change their focus and promote a tourism-y type thing because that was easier to get the funding for than as a means prevention. Yeah. So
even though this money is and this program was initiated on a state level, and that apparently that was budgeted.
That was to set up the actual awareness groups.
Yeah. Okay.
And that then it put forward, Lifespan put forward all these, like all different reasons how to prevent it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then
you have to look for the funding.
So then got to get involved.
Yeah.
And then find the funding from somewhere.
Okay. Gotcha.
And then you've got to be shovel ready and all this kind of stuff. if you want the money. And our new member, Liza Butler, has been quite open to having a meeting and trying to secure funding for a car park. But we have to wait till the end of the year so that the warranty period is over for work that's been done there before we start trying to do something else.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. That's a bit frustrating again, wasn't it, with some of the timelines that we had money that we had to spend it by a certain period. If we didn't have it, it'd be lost.
Yeah.
Especially funding from council. That seems to disappear if you don't spend it within a certain period of time as well.
We spent that one because that was how we got the locale consulting on board.
Mm.
That was their funding. We were lucky we got that. Patricia organised that.
Patricia White?
Yeah. Yeah. So she's been good. She's come to a few of the meetings and she's also been quite proactive in some of the stuff.
Yeah.
Like we just – it's still just an ongoing thing. There's who's going to look after it now. Like, because you go up there and sometimes you look at it and you think, oh. The only criticism I've had is, geez, those gardens need some looking after.
How come it's not a council thing? Because, I mean,
because
especially
it's Crown Land.
Oh, God.
But having said that, there's a couple of local community groups that have put their hand up that will assist if they're called upon, haven't they?
Yeah.
They put their hand up, but whether they come to the party, it is to be
seen. Then it all comes down to if you've got people out there working, insurances, it's just, it's unbelievable. It's
a minefield.
Really?
Wow.
And then, you know, there's talk of getting a coffee lady up there, especially on a weekend or something.
Yeah, because that's where my mind was going, especially at night and the lights are set up there and stuff. Like even having a little coffee there for people to go. Because I think that's a really good thing to have people there, especially those odd hours at night, you know, 9, 10 o'clock, where you can still go and, you know, especially once it starts warming up.
Yeah.
It'd be nice, you know, just being out there.
Yeah, well, the lights that are out there are triggered when people go out there, but then they will dim right down because you've still got to take into account the wildlife.
Wildlife, yeah, for sure.
And it is a functioning lighthouse.
Yes.
Yeah.
We can't be blurring the light that comes up there to help the chicks and the fishermen.
Yeah, but
you know, even like where they've done the work, even because it's Crownland on the other side of the fence, we would really need someone to go out and just like cut the tops out of those trees because on the right-hand side looking out to sea, if those bushes were trimmed off, and most of it's rubbish, it's not good quality native bush.
Yeah, just a bit of scrub.
Yeah, you would be able to see further down the coast.
Yeah, okay.
You know, like, but it's all just getting in the ear of the right person.
Mm.
Or you need money. Or it's just it really frustrating. You think, Jesus, sometimes I just go over there and go, have you done with it? No. You can't.
Yeah, we need some guerrilla gardeners.
Yeah. I never heard that.
Sorry. Yeah,
isn't
wow.
Isn't there a group that do a lot of clean-up stuff once a month?
Yeah, right?
They tread quite
gently.
Yes.
Yeah, what a minefield that you've been through the last 7 years.
Just to
get this, because our council can't.
She's had a loss in between.
Yeah.
The hubby. Sadly, he took his own life too, didn't he, mate?
Yeah. Yeah, 2018. Yeah. But again, statistically, it's high marriages that don't survive a suicide in their family, especially if it's a child. They struggle.
I can only imagine. I mean, I always think that losing a child alone.
Well,
no matter what means.
Your children aren't supposed to predecease you, mate. That's not how it's supposed to go.
I think that's one of the most difficult things this human life would have to face, you know, losing a child.
It's something you just don't – it's with you all the time.
Mm.
All the time.
Mm.
And, I don't know. It's hard to – because I was like, we've got Aaron's ashes at home and – some people probably think it's weird. You got some people if they're coming to the house and kind of like it's pretty obvious. And I think, yeah, well, good. So how long could go?
Yeah, exactly. It's for you.
As a parent, you think about your children every day of the year anyway, don't you?
Yes.
So I want them to love and tote them.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. People that might find that strange, I think they're the strange ones.
Yeah.
How can you not have your love? Your love doesn't diminish.
No, yeah. but even like my mum, when my dad passed away, his ashes were scattered off the naval ship HMAS Hobart because he was a Navy man originally.
Gotcha. Okay, yeah.
And then the Navy gave us a map showing the cross out off Jervis Bay, you know, and all that stuff. Well, I had all that framed to put it up on the wall. My mother was mortified that I would do that. I said, but that's Dad. Like, that's where he is. Like,
I mean, I think you're a beautiful inspiration how to handle these things, to be honest, just from my personal opinion. I mean, I think it's, for some reason, our culture, death is really suppressed. Mm. It's in the shadow. We don't talk about it. We don't deal with it well, most people. Yeah. And I think that does a disservice, really. I think it's important to, as you're doing and your living experience, talk about these things and process, help. And then I think, as you said, like, gives others permission to talk about it and then process it. And I think it's really lacking in our society. I mean, you can go into reasons why, but it's a strange, you know, it's a strange thing in our Western world, because we have that disconnect, because we have the funeral services where a lot of other parts of the world, you handle it, and the body's there, and but I think it's quite cathartic, just that process close to the body, and whereas everyone wants to shut it out, not think about it. Maybe it's because we're all. We can't escape it individually.
Yeah, but like when my dad died, you know, the nurse at the hospital, do you want to go and see him? No. I said, well, I do.
Mm.
And I'd seen him straight after he'd passed, and, like, it was awful. Mm. But then the nurses had got in there and they had the room beautiful and flowers and dim lights, fresh linen, he'd been washed, clean clothes.
Mm.
And you walked in and it was like, and he wasn't fighting for breath anymore, and it was serene for me, and it was as upsetting as it was. I thought, he's at peace finally. But mum, it's just not mum.
And I've just seen that experience, and I think it is cathartic, because you allow some of that grieving. For me personally, I allowed some of the grieving process, just having the body there, you know, it was quite normal.
Yeah, well,
you know, we shut it out. And I remember when my grandmother died, like, I didn't want to look at the body, I was still young, and but yeah, I'm older now and I've seen it, and I think it was really cathartic for me.
Well, even when they brought Aaron up, I said, I want to see him. And they went, what? I want to see him. So anyway, we did. And it was, I don't know, he looked rested. He didn't look tense anymore, you know. So I'm thinking maybe he's found his peace, and that's what you can hope for, that he found his peace. But it's certainly strange for people how they handle it. But for me, I'm quite open about it. You know, like, I'd like to see the body, it's finished. Like, there's an end to it. Like, you get to see them. Like, went in to see Aaron, and Sky said, did you take a photo? I said, yep. He said, I knew you would. I said, well, I don't see a problem with that. I just don't see the problem with it.
No, good for you, yeah.
You know, like, it's just how it is. Look, even if it was under the most horrendous circumstances, car accidents, I still think I'd want to see that person. I think I still would. You know, like, I never saw him at the bottom of the cliff, but Ron had seen him, his dad, and that never left him, never left him.
Sure.
I don't know. I think I may be a bit different. Like, I asked for the autopsy report and everything. Like, every now and then I'll pull it out and read it. Like, I know that's probably a bit weird to people, but I don't know. It's just how you process it.
Yeah.
And maybe it's so you believe that your child's actually gone. And he's talked about, or they both talked about, still a lot by the family. Like, the kids, Look, there was also collateral damage, not only his brother and sister, but his nieces and nephews as well.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah. It's terrible for them.
For sure.
And they ended up going through, like, 3 in 2 years. Like, not good.
It's rough.
Mm. So it is something that needs to be addressed. It is something that needs to be talked about.
What do you find the strength from?
I don't know.
There's no defining moment where you've realised?
Well, I've always been told, I don't personally see it, but I've always been told I'm quite strong.
Do you think it's a predisposition in someone?
Possibly is, yeah. And, like, there's, I don't know, you just, I don't think it's my nursing background, because there's even people, girls in nursing that aren't strong. I don't know, like, it is what it is. It's one of my favourite things. You just got to get on with it and deal with it. It's not good falling apart, because nothing gets solved. And then sometimes some of the hardest part is that you can't solve everything.
Mm.
Yeah. But,
yeah. Did you have a fall apart moment?
I'm not 100% sure that I have, actually, because there's, since Aaron passed, there has been ongoing dramas, as you know. Then his dad, or prior to his dad, had that car accident. I was in that high-speed rollover in Sydney and had the head injury and stuff. Then Ron, and then there was all sorts of other dramas that had taken place. I've had several surgeries since then, with one thing and another. I had 7 surgeries in 1 year. I don't know, you just don't seem to get the chance.
Has this process helped?
Yeah, this is maybe this is part of it, that why you keep it together. You know, like, his room's still his room, and you go in and I'll lay on the bed and, yeah, like, you know, I've had to wash sheets and stuff, obviously, since it happened. You think, well, I'm losing him. But no, you're not really. Like, it's what's in your heart that's what's important.
Mm.
I've set up a memorial thing at home in the lounge room. It's one of those glass cabinets. Mm. And all these little bits and pieces, because, like, he was into his rocks and all that stuff, it all sits in there. And so he's not forgotten.
Mm.
Like, he's still part of the family.
Mm.
Yeah. Do you get approached by other parents that have lost a child?
No, I haven't. But see, I'm not one of those ones that – I'm not out in the community a lot, really. They're happy to talk to you if they know.
Yeah.
What's happened. Quite often people will open up. But no, like, no one said, well, I've had a child that suicided, will you talk to me? There is a suicide group that actually runs with the Salvation Army once a month at the mission. But I went to a couple. They've had problems getting people there, actually. Some of them, there's no one. And it's only a very small group. And I just think, oh, I don't know. I don't need to go through it like this, this formal, because you live with it every day.
Mm.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. And do you have people approach you? You as a policeman, yeah. You'd have to.
Yeah, constantly.
Yeah.
Whilst I'm quite a gregarious person, I love socialising, there's times when you just have enough.
Yes.
I'm here to hang out with you, Dino. Not to keep talking about my work.
Yeah.
That sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Close friends realise that and not very often bring it up. But
yeah.
Peripheral friends do, they?
Yeah.
The ones that you don't see a lot of, and they'll go, hey, heard about this the other day. Do you know anything about it? I generally lie to them. Have no idea what you're talking about. I'm sorry about that.
Yeah
but they shouldn't be asking anyway.
Oh, it's a small town.
Yeah, I know. It's the nature of the beast. People want to know. Yeah, I know.
And I don't think they're invariably coming from a bad place. A lot of people are genuinely interested in what's happening in their community.
Yeah.
Mm.
And they want to know why certain things happen, why there's sirens going through. I don't know. During the fires, kids were getting PTSD from the sirens.
Yes.
And it started to become a triggering effect.
Mm.
And it sort of is for us too, because we go, oh, no, there's the ambulance. Because when you start to tell the difference between the fire, the police, and the ambos, the sirens, it's like going, I half know what that's going to be now just by the sound of the sirens. That's a fire. That's the ambos going up somewhere. Yeah. That's the cops pulling someone over and destroying their day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Rightio.
Hear a bit of that up on the highway.
Do you? So people are interested in what's happening around, but I do find, because it can be straightforward, I will introduce a taboo subject to the people asking just to make them feel uncomfortable or shut them up.
Yeah.
Or bring up something their relative has done or maybe something stupid they've done in the past. And,
yeah.
Oh, you're talking about like when you did. Zip.
Yeah.
And they don't want to talk about the other person
Funny
who
that,
may
eh?
Have done something stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or, but, you know, sometimes talking about that, the person who's done something stupid, the person asking, it's like, well, there are other people, like I'm not the only clown.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they're trying to make themselves feel better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, gossip. Well, some of it's gossip, but then it's amazing how sometimes when people open up, you find out that these families that you think are like the Brady Bunch, they're far from it, and they've all got their, you know, little skeletons in the closet. And sometimes someone will say something, they think, oh, and I've gone, oh, thank God. And they go, what do you mean? I'm Jesus, it's just not my family. You know, I said, talk all you like. It's making me feel good today because I'm not the only one, you know. Like, yeah, some people just want to feel that they're not alone.
Yeah.
But then there are those that are just want to be gossip. And you may say something, you know, X, Y, Z, but by the time it's got to the 10th person, it's ABC. Like the whole thing has changed. That is what worries me in this town.
So if I was to come up to you and say, I heard your son committed suicide, how would you respond to that?
I'd say, yeah, he did, out at the lighthouse.
And
in November 2016, have you been out there and seen the work we've done? And
yeah
I just speak.
Rightio. And if they were to say, I think my child's going through something similar, what are the signs?
Well, sometimes there aren't any signs. It's not until it's happened that you can look back.
Mm.
Like one of the things Aaron did was come out one day and said, oh, if you get a life insurance policy, you can't claim on it for 13 months if you commit suicide. Now, no one at that point thought anything of it.
Mm.
Like just, oh, yeah, because you're so caught up. But later that comes out, and one of the songs he put on Facebook, which was Frank Sinatra, My Way.
Mm.
Now, I just thought, he's just being a bit of a dick today. He's, you know, stirring. I listened to that after he'd passed. I should have listened to it. Because when you're listening to it, it's stuff in it. And yeah, it was like, oh, that could have been a hint.
There's a lot of indicators there, isn't there?
Yeah, there is.
The getting your affairs in order.
Yeah.
Suddenly become unhappy when they've been sad for
yes,
so long.
Yes, that is a big sign that they've got everything kind of in order, and they may have had mental health issues, and all of a sudden everyone's thinking they're travelling real good.
Mm.
And the reason they're travelling really well is because they've made their mind up what they're going to do.
Really?
And they've come to peace with it. And they're like, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. And the next thing they're gone, everyone's, oh, they're going so good. Well, they're going so good because they resolve what they're going
to
do.
Yeah, they got to the resolution phase.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's
cool. That's 2020 hindsight, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Very much so. Very much. And see, the day that I, on the Tuesday morning, I was going to work, and Aaron was sitting outside having a smoke, and I went out, and I just was said goodbye, and he wasn't particularly good, and I just, for some reason, I went up and just gave him a cuddle before I went. And he reached around and gave me this really big cuddle. And I thought, oh, that's nice. But it was
saying goodbye.
Yeah, but I didn't realise that then, you know. Mm. And then I went off to work and just did what I was have to be doing. And even when they couldn't find him, I just thought, oh, he's just gone off somewhere in his car, because he used to do that. But, yeah, that wasn't the case. So yeah, there's all the things looking back always. there sometimes you'll get people that obviously there isn't, but a lot, in the majority of cases I'd say, and I think Alex and Jenny would back me up on this, that there's signs. But if anyone's ever worried, then they really need to go and speak to somebody. Yeah, they need to ring mental health, or they need to ring the helplines, although I don't know how good the helplines are. I really don't.
No, I find they're more of a referral service.
Yeah.
They're a conduit to getting proper help.
Yeah, but then it all comes to funding and how long that help's going to take. Often you don't have that luxury of sitting on the phone for forever. And if you're concerned about something, you really need to be getting onto someone straight away.
You know. We get them as at work, we get them as a referral. Lifeline will be on the phone to someone and they'll say suicidal ideation phrases. Whilst I'll keep them on the line, they'll ring Triple O and say, we've got major concerns about this person.
Mm.
That happens way too often.
When you go to those people under those circumstances, do they feel betrayed by Lifeline?
Initially, yeah. Because they're thinking they're there in confidence talking about it. However, the confidence they have with that anonymous person on that phone line gets dissipated straight away when it becomes an issue of life and death.
Mm.
And I have no trouble in the world with telling that person, like, the whole reason we are here is because you have said you want to kill yourself. And that's one of the things that we need to get across. If you feel like someone is going down that path, you have to be quite direct with them. You can't be circumloquacious with your language. You have to say, are you planning on killing yourself? How are you planning to do this? What are you doing? I can't resolve your issue right now, but I can get you help. Mm. Are you feeling okay?
Yeah.
Actually, yeah, I am feeling okay because I've just decided I'm committing suicide.
Sure
thing.
Yeah.
Thanks for that question. Mm. Whereas look at someone in the eye and say, are you going to kill someone or kill yourself?
Mm.
You'll generally get a direct answer, and it's surprising how well that works. It's like the, are you okay?
Mm.
When you flippantly throw it around and it's like, yeah, are you okay, and just keep walking, whereas if you stare someone in the eye and say, are you okay, they're going to give you a fairly decent response.
The majority of the time. And, you know, there will be the naysayers out there, but the majority of the time that's how it works. And, you know, we're a statistical world, aren't we? So you've got to go on statistics. What gets the best results the most of the time?
Yeah.
And you're always going to have that, well, that didn't work for that person. It's always going to be
the bell curve.
Yeah, always.
The majority of the time, being a direct question gets a direct answer.
Mm.
And unfortunately, I've come across it way too often. Well, probably fortunately, I've come across it way too often because then I'm able to get them help.
Mm.
It's the other side of it, but it's becoming so prevalent.
Yeah.
Mm.
It's not like we've been through a good period of...
No.
It's been crazy the last few years.
Yeah.
Well, at one point, going back a few years, our Dulla area had a suicide rate higher than the national average. It's going back, I don't know, 20, maybe longer than that, 25 years or something. We had quite a few. There was three different ones at the Lighthouse, and there was another fellow from one of the restaurants. So it was a lot. But
just after the last global financial one in the 90s, when they went from prosperous to people were making a lot of money at the end of the 80s, 90s here. Building was going through a similar thing that's going through at the moment around the area. That was because I think in the 80s, there was still only about 5,500, 7,000 people here, where it exploded up to about 15,000 in a short, like 3 or 4 years, but then it stopped again. And if you're built on a building industry, suddenly all that's gone. That's your hospitality gone. That's your industries that rely on extra wealth that wasn't there anymore.
I think with suicide, they seem to be younger.
These days?
Yeah.
Than what it once was?
Yeah.
Mm.
You know, look, it's just when you think kids are just, they can't see a way out, it's sad.
I've got to say that has shocked me just hearing some of the ages that I've heard.
Mm.
I mean, it wasn't like that when I was that age.
Mm.
what is it? The 17 to 44 is the
yes.
most.
Yes.
The target group. And it's the means. Because statistically, men and women attempt suicide at the same rates. It's just that men are, for want of a better word, are far more successful. It's because of the means that they use. Whereas a woman's more likely to...
She's a bit more gentle.
Yeah,
she's not likely to overdose or something.
Overdose or drown.
Shoot herself with a gun.
Yeah, okay, she's not going to hang herself. She's not going to plough a car into a tree. You know, generally, they don't jump off cliffs.
Okay.
But, it's just as rampant with both sexes and genders, just that men are...
Different methods.
Yeah, different methods. And
but I think it's statistically higher, though. I think it is with men.
Mm.
You know, as years have gone on, sometimes I think men have lost their way about where they're actually sitting in the world. Women's lives got a little bit to answer for, but that's another story.
Mm. Mm.
Yeah, it's all very... The world at the moment, COVID, all that, it's just so much pressure. Mm. I hope that what we've done out at the lighthouse, there isn't another one out there, you know. I really do
hope. Well, that is one of the good things that we've seen in the last couple of years. There hasn't been a self-harm out there for a number of years. Yeah, that was an anomaly, though. There was one person, and it wasn't quite at the site, was it? It was a little bit further around the walking track.
Yeah, it wasn't that far from where Aaron went.
Although the stats a bit skewed because it was shut down for so long while they're building. So I suppose we'll be reflecting in 5 to 10 years' time to see how it's going. We're definitely, I can say, as a from an emergency services point of view, we're not getting called out there for the people threatening.
Okay.
And that was probably a couple of months a year. Every third, fourth month, you're definitely getting called out there. And I'm not saying someone that's feeling sad for themselves sitting in a car.
Mm.
That's someone teetering on a ledge.
Mm.
But you've also had, there was not long after Aaron, I think, I'm not sure the actual time, but there's been 4 young men that have gone out there and thought about it and come back and gone straight to mental health. Now, you don't hear about any of them. You know, they've reflected, gone back to mental health.
Mm.
And at that point, I think we already had the signs up just to, is an interim thing. So I just hope it does what it does, and I hope it is looked after and we can push somehow to get it a little bit better than it is.
Mm.
I'd like to have a little bit more Aboriginal representation out there. Which I thought we were going to have, but it didn't come to fruition at the time. But yeah, there's still
time.
Yeah, and there's still more work to do out there.
So, what are the plans for the furthering?
Well, that car park. And once the car park's done, like the actual lighthouse group, a lot of people. Once we got the funding, I think a lot of people was like, "Wow." That's it. It's done now.
Sure.
I'll come back off.
Okay.
Where in some ways I've probably got a little bit more tenacious because we had our last meeting, it was last year, and we had it out there when it just opened, and I'm there saying, well, there's still this, this and this, and then I've got to get the whip out too. So, well, it's not over yet.
Mm.
We've still got all this other stuff.
The public binoculars, we're still waiting on them.
Yes, that's...
What was it?
Public binoculars.
Binoculars.
Oh, two cool. sets of...
Oh, that tape's good.
Yeah.
But we want them free. That's the...
Yeah.
They cost a bit more that way, which is a little bit... Yeah, but it's coming.
We do have a little bit of funding for coming in from the community and board riders and stuff that we need to do something with. I would really like some sort of shelter out there.
Yeah.
You know, like we've got over at Mollymook at the beaches there. They've stood up to the weather in time and memoriam over there.
Mm.
That the council did that.
Mm.
Something similar to that at the actual lighthouse would be good.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't suit everyone to sit around on the concrete.
Sure.
And I've noticed there's been a lot more older people out there as well. Like, I think you've got to kind of cater for that. And a toilet. even just a unisex toilet, which I hate unisex toilets, but even a unisex toilet out there, because the talk was that, you know, oh, then go down to the Oval. I said, well, that's a long way for a lot of people to walk. If you've got someone up there in a wheelchair, you know, or what do? Drive down there and they come back and they can't get a park again and they've got family. I said, no, you need the toilet on site. And like the water goes up as far as Bommy. Got a shower there.
Yeah,
surely to God we could.
It's only another 150-odd metres.
Yeah.
But it, again, it comes
nothing wrong with a long drop.
Yeah, there is, mate.
Bit of spur. In an emergency?
No. But it's getting there.
Yeah. I'm just maintaining it. I think we're not going to drop the ball on that.
No, that needs to be looked at hard. But we do have another meeting next month. And there's a few things that we need to sort of like push on because we've got September, October, November, and then the end of the year, like nothing happens. So
one very pleasing thing about it, though, is the rate of usage up there.
It's brilliant. It's brilliant.
The amount of people see coming and going.
Yeah, that's what I noticed. It was chockers, and heaps of old people going up there. And
yeah. And even though, like, it is whale watching season.
Yeah.
Even before the whale watching season started, there was plenty of people up there. Yeah.
Well, it's just nice, and you can sit there and you can take some lunch up there. Mm. It's just a good spot, you know.
Yeah. Well, often prior to it being done, you'd have a family go out there, and I'm assuming some of them may have been holiday people, and they've gone out there with their pizzas and stuff, and they're eating it off the bonnet of the car. You know, so that's one of the reasons. A couple of seats up there would be good.
Yeah.
And previously you'd be standing up there and someone just driving around the lighthouse would cause a dust storm.
Yes.
So that's sort of dissipated away.
Yeah, for sure.
The only thing that sort of wanted to build on was the safety barriers that are out there.
Yes. Those really need to be along the cliff, like just that little bit there.
Gotcha.
There is an area in particular that really does need attention badly.
Yeah.
But again, that's approaching Cranley because that's not the council part. To have seen the fencing. Symbolic
as well. Like, mere presence of being able to view it puts people in a mindset as well that, oh, hang on, why they've done something here for a reason. But we've got the signage to go along with it.
Yeah.
Whilst it might not be a physical barrier, at times it is a mental barrier.
Yeah.
When they are ill, because you are ill when you're thinking of killing yourself and you do need help, that maybe it's just a reset trigger that can go, oh, God, I am going down this path.
For sure.
Just put it in their mind sight. But, barriers. We'd love to see it get a little bit
The whale bone fencing a bit further around. Yeah. But that is very expensive as well. So that's a huge cost, the whale bone fencing, which is it's hard to get over but easier to come back if you got over.
Yeah.
And they're saying we've got all the vegetation on the cliff edge, that's going to stop people. Well, no, it won't.
No.
Someone's determined enough. Like there was paths were walked into that bush to start. They used to go right to the cliff edge. So it may not be there now because it hasn't been a lot of people there. But eventually, you know, you'll get those that'll want to do it again.
Mm.
But overall, it's been a long, hard road, but it's not over.
Mm.
I can't believe it's 7 years.
Seven and a half
That's
years.
That's crazy.
It is. I hate to be doing business like that.
But it's totally different killer fish, isn't it?
It is.
Like, it's just not
our business.
And
it's not like we're doing a disservice.
No.
Do you think something like it would be able to get...
It's pretty smooth line it, right?
Yeah.
It's such a good initiative.
Yeah.
You think to be a lot less hurdles, or you'd like to think so.
Well, at the end of the day too, hopefully, it's good for the community in that it's bringing more people into the community. Even a day trip from somewhere, you've got the tourism side of it. And that's how we kind of got to push it a bit now, I guess. Although never for me, it'll never be that.
Yeah.
Well, it's not for that. No. It's just a byproduct of what we'll
have
to
achieve.
Yeah.
But as with Willara Council, that was kind of the tack they needed to take, especially when you're going for certain sorts of funding.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of more the tact.
Yeah, and if that's the move you need to make to get the objective done, so be it.
Yeah.
I mean, because it can be part of it too.
Mm.
For people that are listening, is there any, and they, you know, perhaps want to get involved or help out in some way, is there any way we can, direction we can drive them, or is it any way that people can help or drum up interest or approach council or?
Well, there's a meetings that are, well, there's a meeting that'll be held at Mission Australia on September the something. First Monday, is it? September, 1 o'clock, for anyone that's interested. And until we, is that the date? The 4th.
Essentially from here on in, the funding's the thing that we need the most to continue upkeep of the area, to finalise the plan that was developed.
Yep.
Visiting it. Just going up there and utilising the facilities is another thing we're big on, and bearing in mind some of the issues that Judy and I have raised today. And if you see that in your family, your friends or your associates, just to tap them on the shoulder. It can be like a 30-second conversation, or it could be a 30-minute conversation. It's a lot better than standing at a funeral. Mm.
Yeah.
It hurts going to those things.
Mm.
And truly, if we can...
Yes.
Well, we're of the opinion if it stops one. So we don't want to just stop one. We want to stop most of them. Mm. And we're realistic to realise, as Judy said, is that if they're that well-minded that they're going to commit suicide, they're going to do that. We understand that. We're not going to stop everyone from committing suicide.
And you also get flippant remarks on that. When we were trying to do this work, some of the people that came to the meeting said, oh, what are you doing this for? It's a waste of time. They're just going to find somewhere else.
It's been proven
that that's not the case.
Yeah, sure. In some cases, for sure. Yeah. Like, if they're that determined, you can't stop them, obviously. Yeah. I mean, that's pretty obvious.
Yeah.
But, you know, if someone's on the bleeding edge and have gone there and they see just the signs alone and, you know, you've it's that little trigger, just that little point. They've been on the bleeding edge of what they're about to do, and it's a switch goes off. Yep. That's a win.
Yep.
Just one person. That's
absolutely
a win.
Absolutely it is. And that's why we do what we've done.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And often that make these changes, it comes from, it happens because of a tragedy. Often it's sad in our community, but that's what happens.
Mm.
It's a tragedy, and then all of a sudden people are doing something. But, this was originally driven by Alex and Jenny, and like they've been absolutely brilliant. And like Jenny was Aaron's worker, and she couldn't have done any more for him anymore. She was brilliant. She went above and beyond.
Beautiful.
I'm sure you'll get people that will say that, well, that's not been my experience with mental health, but I can't say a bad word. They've been the driving force behind it as well.
So if someone's local and either someone they know, a loved one, or someone themselves is in a difficult time, where do they turn locally? Where do they go for help?
Well, Allerdale Mental Health.
Yeah, that's what it's called.
And if it's happening there and then, OOO, ambulance, the ambulance officers can assess someone straight away. Well, and police turn up to help them. We do the initial assessment. We can detain people under the Mental Health Act if we fear that they're going to do something that's going to harm them or harm others.
Okay, yeah.
And then ambulance have got even greater powers in relation to detaining people when we generally don't want to do it against their will. However, if it's got to that stage where they're going to hurt themselves, harm others, then that needs to be done. And your local GP.
Yes.
That's where the plan starts.
Okay.
If going down that road and you've got time to be able to talk it out with people.
They can set up a mental health plan.
They set up a mental health plan.
Yeah, you can get mental health plans. But again, it's so hard to get into so many people because there is such a need around mental health, and we don't have the facilities to cater for a lot of it. Mm. Like even for the young kids, like anything to do with young kids is all taken out of town. Like, it's crazy.
Mm.
You need more money put in everywhere, really. And I think it's going to become a bigger issue.
It is. And I know just talking to the teachers at the high school, the Aladella High School, it's becoming their biggest growth area is the special education classes where the kids have got special needs and mental health issues and things that need addressing. So it's not becoming a smaller issue. It's something we do need to address more and more and be more aware of and be able to pick up the signs.
Yes. I hope that would be the case. It's always been there, but it's just got so much worse. It's just a sign of the times. And then like that's another pod. You could go off as to why you think things are getting worse, why things aren't what they were. If you have got any worries at all, like Doug said, the police, ambulance, or if you've got ring mental health, if you want to chat with someone to get a course of action, like I'm worried about this, what do you suggest I do?
Actually, I've got a phone number for the mental health referral line so that a person can ring on behalf of someone else and they do, then mental health referral people will then put an action into place and they'll contact whoever needs the help. It's a 1-800 number, so it doesn't cost anything. 1-800-011-511, and that's a mental health referral. So if you've got someone in your family that you're worried about, or you're even worried about someone in the community, and it could be as little as an older person who's not looking after themselves.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Give them a ring and just do a referral. The referral is, hi, we're from so-and-so. Can you have a look at this person?
Yep.
It's a bit like ringing Crime Stoppers in a way.
Yeah.
Got a concern about the neighbour. The blinds are always up and there's a strange chemical smell. I'm just worried about the mental health of this person. They're mowing the lawn in their undies. Something simple.
And that's a big part about it, like as a community looking out for each other.
Yep.
Just looking out for those. And being sincere and not mixing words, you know, if it's that bad. Are you okay? Look him in the eye.
Yeah.
And doing it for the right reasons.
And wait
reasons.
For the answer. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you don't offer a helping hand and then try to help people and then turn around and gossip about it to all and sundry.
Sure.
Like you have to be pure in your motive.
Yeah.
Genuine.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Sincere.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, well, this has been so good and truly an inspiration what you guys have done here and inspiration, Judy, just what you've been through.
Thank you.
And the strength that you carry, real inspiration for others. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, see, I just don't kind of see it. I bet people have said that. But it's, it's not a good place to be in. I'd rather be told I'm strong for other things.
Yeah. Understand, but you carried so much and credit to you, absolutely, and a guiding light for others. You know, if you're open speaking about it, pulls it out of the shadows and shines some light on it.
Yeah,
gives other people.
Yeah, like Doug said, neither of us really hide from it. Yeah, you just gotta say it's what it is.
Yeah, and call it out, and then you know.
And I'm not encumbered by working for someone where you've got to sit in their guidelines and. Be careful what you say.
I like that about
anyway.
You.
Not anymore, I'm not.
I like that.
So, I can sort of say what I think.
Yeah. All right. Thanks so much, guys. And
thank you.
We can have you back on to talk again, expand on things and as it happens.
Yeah.
And the number that you put out there, Doug, I'll have in the show notes. And, please, everyone, just look out for each other. And if you are concerned, find that help.
Yeah. Thank you, Dean. Thank you for the opportunity.
All right. See ya. Training.